Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me this Sunday afternoon via Zencaster is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, the Islanders played two whole games this week. Two! Can you believe it? They won one and they lost one. The win was pretty thrilling. The loss was pretty sad. And we're kind of right back to where we started from again, wondering what the rest of the season is going to be like for this team.
Yeah, it takes a lot of self-control to kind of keep the big picture view. I was at the game against Washington with my dad, and it was, I feel like I say this every game, and it's part of it is like superstition and trying to reverse mush the Islanders, and I'm like, oh, it's pretty clear they're not going to score. And when Dobson ripped the post, I was like, oh, I think actually they might be onto something here. And then the rest of the period, they just were snuffed out, and it became pretty obvious when Josh Bailey made, when the Josh Bailey Museum opens in Belmont, then there would be paintings hanging. The painting, there's going to be the good hall, which is like his like real highlights, and then there's going to be the bad hall, and you can take your family into both at the same time. It's single admission, of course, at the Josh Bailey Museum, and when you go from you'd probably want to start with the bad hall because you want to, set yourself up for the good ending. And the opportunity he passed up yesterday, that was vintage coach. And that's when it became clear, like, if they're not going to score on that, they're probably not going to score for the game. And it was frustrating because, like, they were building momentum, and there's so many different ways you can look at the stretch of games they've been playing, right? Like, they won three of their last four, which is what, basically, we've been saying this team needs to win two out of their next three, 66% of their games for the rest of the season to claw their way back into an absurd playoff race. And they did that in terms of like the four game sample. But in the immediate, when you lose that game, you come out feeling like, well, the season's over again. And I mean, it's the season's in all likelihood been over for a while, but it's like this, this is just season's more over today. And, but then you come back up for air and you look at the next few games, and they're very winnable, and the winnable games are the must win games, right? Two against Philadelphia and then the Arizona game. So you could be looking at a stretch where if all goes right, which, knock on wood, let's hope it does, and the Islanders win games that they will likely be favored to win, or even if they take like 5 out of 6 points, you're looking at a stretch of, 6 of 7 or whatever it is would be, or f- 5-1-1, whatever the stretch ends up. And you're like, well, if they play that kind of hockey or make a habit out of this kind of stretches, the season won't be over too soon, which is basically what we've been asking for since the unbelievable 11-game losing streak, which will have a lot of paintings from Josh Bailey bad museum.
Well, that museum, I think you're right. You would want to start with the bad era. And that would basically be his entire rookie season when this poor guy was on one of the worst teams ever as like a 17 or 18 year old. And you know,
it seems 17 or 18 year old who's overdrafted, like relative to his position too. It's like, he was like, everyone was like, oh, this guy's a project. He's got a good hockey IQ. And then what do the Islanders do? They just like, nah, you're riding shotgun with Doug Waite on the first line, buddy. A 38 year old Doug Waite.
Well, there was like, he was a project, but he was also like kind of a big junior scorer guy. So it was sort of like everybody wanted him to be kind of all things at one time. But that season, I don't know, it's kind of a classic early Islanders season where nothing went right and everybody was at fault for everything and just nothing ever worked. And it's a little similar to this season. We'll talk more about the games coming up at the second half, but you know, this season is going to go down barring some kind of miracle run to the playoffs. And every day I kind of feel like that becomes less and less likelihood. Not so much because of the Islanders, but because I don't see any of the teams ahead of them losing 10 games in a row. Like I can see a situation where the Islanders, like you said, I mean, they had won 3 out of their last 4. They had won a couple before their pause, you know, just at the end of December. They got these 3 very winnable games coming up right now. You know, maybe they get some momentum. Maybe they could even beat the Leafs next Saturday. And then they have a bunch of winnable games in the week after. So, like, I can see the Islanders totally putting together a run and gathering points in, you know, a long stretch of games. I can't see the Bruins all of a sudden dropping 10 of 11 or the Rangers dropping. I mean, these teams seem to win by accident sometimes. Like the Rangers, they did not have a great game against the Flyers the other day, but they just won. You know, I mean, the Penguins didn't have a great game against the Sharks, but they just won, you know, and the Bruins just now they got 2 Tuukka backs. They just keep winning. So that's my problem. I can't see any of those teams dropping off much.
Like this is like the duality of it all, right? Like those teams are just all winning. You said it, games on accident, like they're winning games for fun. And you look at the Bruins right now are in the last playoff spot in the East, and they're playing at 108 point pace. So you look at it and you can say, oh, I'm really discouraged because that is absurd and this team's really good and they're not going to slow down. And yeah, the Bruins are really good, I think. But you also can think, you know, that's not sustainable. Like we've never seen a playoff, a season where the last team that gets into the playoffs finishes at 108 points. And you know, that would mean all 8 teams, you're talking between like what, 123 and like 108 or something, and this just won't happen. So you can look at it that way, and I really do think it's more likely than not that one of these teams comes down, and the question is like, have they built up so much room that even that doesn't bring them to the Islanders? And there is definitely a shift also in the league. I wrote an article over the week at Action Network about how favorites are just absolutely crushing in the NHL this season, which is it's usually not the case. It's usually favorites win around 56 to 59% of their games in the NHL, which is actually, you know, not as high, it's not as much as you think it is. That equates to like minus like 137, 138 odds on average. So what it is we're seeing like 63% this year, and we're seeing big favorites win a lot, and we're seeing that there's just more really, really bad teams. There's much more punching bags in the NHL this season than there are usual. If there's a site called StatMuse, and I was looking it up, that, you know, what's the lowest points percentage any team has finished in the NHL since the shootout. So 2005 was brought in, and there were 16 teams, including this year, you know, just saying like if the season ended today, like under 0.375 points percentage. So 16 teams, 11, 5 of them are this season. So 5 out of 16 of the worst teams we've seen since 2005 are playing this season. It's like Ottawa, Buffalo,
Arizona comes in next week.
Montreal's got a worse record than I think than Arizona right now. And then Seattle. So
Yeah.
And some of these teams may not finish that low. Like I would suspect that Ottawa won't. I think actually Ottawa and Buffalo are now like above that arbitrary mark I set. But what it's just telling you that you're getting, if you're in the Atlantic, you're Florida, Tampa Bay, Toronto, Boston, you're facing Buffalo, Ottawa, Montreal, those three of the three of the 16 worst teams we've seen since 2005. You're seeing them four times a season. That's 12 games that you're going to win like 10 or 11 of without a problem. And then it's the cupcakes are just there for the taking.
Same goes for Vegas too, out in the Pacific. Like if you're going to play Seattle and Arizona a bunch of times a year this year, that you're just gifted points basically.
And I think it all speaks to just how like the season, I mean, last season was so weird, but it was set up weird pre-season. Like you went into it with the expectation, like this is going to be weird because they completely changed the format of the league. You're playing the teams in your division. It's 56 games. There's no crowd yet. This season you went into it with like hopes of a little bit of normalcy. And I think everyone you would have to be a little naive for you not to think that it was going to be interrupted at some point by something. But everyone was thinking, the weirdest part of the season is going to be the Olympic break, which is not even happening anymore because the season has gone so off the rails. Right. And that, I think, has bled over into the actual, competition. And I guess you can argue that of all the teams in the league, the Islanders have been affected by the absolute baddiness of the season more than any team. It might not even be close. And that's what they're dealing with. Like if you look at it from that perspective too, you're like, if this team can defy all the odds and all the biblical things that have been thrown at them, you're talking about a really, really special season when things come to the end. And if they don't, like there's still, I think, plenty of reason to be optimistic about where the Islanders are. And we'll talk about even, like other extenuating reasons to be optimistic, I guess, in the second half. But there's just so many ways to look at where they are right now. And but the reality, of course, is that they're 20 points out.
Yeah, the reality is not looking very good for them. I would actually put Montreal a little bit above the Islanders in terms of like what they've dealt with. I mean, they started the season without Price and Weber. Every week somebody gets hurt. They've had just as many dudes on the COVID list, but the Islanders are right there. I mean, obviously they're still without Ryan Pulock, who's not only hurt, but also on the COVID list now. Barry Trotz is also on the COVID list, and condolences to Barry and his family on the loss of their mom a few weeks ago, where Barry missed the game. And Lane Lambert is 2-1 now as head coach, while the coach, took care of family business back in Manitoba and then ended up on the COVID list. So it's been a rough couple of weeks for Barry. Hopefully he recovers and is in better spirits soon. But I don't know. I'm almost fascinated to fast forward to the end of the season and see what people kind of think about it, because in a lot of ways we've talked about it and we're going to talk about it again in the second half about kind of changes the Islanders can make on their own, but there's so many extenuating circumstances going into this season. But let's talk about some good stuff. Let's talk about these two games that happened here, one of which was actually a really feel-good win after having 11 days off or whatever it was. They played the Devils last Thursday at UBS, and you would wonder if there was going to be rustiness, if it was going to be one of those kind of sloppy, terrible games. And it was kind of sloppy in both ends, and the Islanders gave up the first goal. Another happy news. J.G. Pageau and Sebastian Aho both missed that game because their wives had babies. So, hey, congratulations. Mazel tov to everybody. I don't know how often – there's a stat for you. How many times two teammates have had wives give birth on the same day and they end up missing the game. That's pretty wild. But it was, kind of a strange, disjointed game going in. John Gillies started in goal for the Devils. He's like their fourth or fifth string guy because everybody else is either hurt or on the COVID list, as Mackenzie Blackwood was earlier. And they gave up the first goal. It was kind of a softie, honestly, for Ilya Sorokin. Hasn't happened too often. But they tied it with a Josh Bailey power play goal. Power play has been really clicking as of late. Not so much against Washington, but we'll talk about it in a second. It was a while. You don't see the Islanders have periods where the shots are 14 each that often, but that's the way it was. And then the second period, they kind of started to take over. Adam Pellick scored a goal. New all-star Adam Pellick. Wow. We should talk about him at the end too. He scored a goal. Zach Parise had a great game. He had two assists. He was in front screening the goal. It's hard to tell whose junk that puck knocked off of. It was either Parisi's or Ryan Graves, the Devils defenseman. But in either case, it worked out pretty well for Adam Pellick, and the Islanders took a 2-1 lead. The Devils did tie it, but the Islanders untied it thanks to Matt Barzal and a beautiful play with Josh Bailey, sort of give and go. Bailey passed it back to Barzal, who was in the slot, and he just ripped it home, and it was great. It was a good game. Oliver Wahlstrom laid a big hit on Jimmy Vesey, popped the helmet. Ross Johnston put a big hit on somebody, ended up getting suspended 3 games for it. Got a little bit hairy at the end, but ultimately the Islanders did secure a pretty big win, 3-2 over, like you said, one of those teams that really they should beat. Sorokin didn't look perfect, but he had 27 saves, so can't complain too much. Then there was Saturday afternoon against Washington, complete opposite of what I just said. There's not a whole lot to say about this one. They lost 2-0. Matt Martin was back in lineup for Ross Johnston. Tom Wilson scored early of all people. The UBS crowd loved that. 3 Islanders were kind of on one side of the ice staring at God knows what, and Wilson was left by himself. Again, ripped it home, and can't blame him. And the only guy who really showed up for the Islanders in that game was Semyon Varlamov, who was fantastic. He had 35 saves, a lot of them, not super dangerous. There weren't a whole lot of high-danger chances for either team, really, for both. But the Caps, they're kind of a volume-shooting team these days, and he had 35 saves. He was great. The other Islanders, not so much. They had their moments, but overall, it was a pretty sloppy game. And afterwards, Lane Lambert was like, that's kind of the game we expected to get against the Devils, and it just ended up showing up a day later. And just, just really kind of demoralizing. Just a very, to lose is one thing, but, to be in the situation that they're in, and we could all talk about, where they are at in the standings, and then to, the Caps are a good team. I credit the Caps for playing a very good, solid defensive game. It was 1-0 until Alex Ovechkin hit that empty netter. So, it wasn't like the Islanders got blown out of the building or anything, but they never really quite had the same energy the Caps did. They were never able to kind of get past the Caps' really stringent defense, and never again really put too many, high-danger chances on the board, and before you know it, the game was over, and it was 2-0, and all that with Ralph Macchio in attendance. Come on, if you can't get up for Ralph Macchio being there, what are we doing out here? Come on, give me a break. So, like you said, it's one of those losses where you're like, even in a normal season, you would like watch that game and be like, that's the end of that. They're done. But in this season, it really does kind of feel like, yeah, they might be done. It's just, that was not a good game. And in a way it's, maybe if they win the next 3 against Philly and then against Arizona, it kind of washes the taste out of your mouth. But that was not a great way to kind of kick off a Saturday afternoon,
Yep. Yeah, because it just puts so much more pressure on those next games now. And I think going back to that Devils game, I thought the Islanders were kind of sucked into playing a game against the team that wanted to get the Islanders off of a stoic kind of structured game. And
Very undisciplined game, by the way. Pellick and Nelson, and 2 penalties each in that game. So, yeah.
That second one was hilarious. That was that was 2016 Brock coming out. The Devils succeeded in that way, but the Islanders, when you're playing, John Gillies, by the way, was really good. And like you said, and Sorokin was, it speaks a lot to Ilya Sorokin that he wasn't very good, I don't think, but still only landed 2 goals, made some really nice saves. But they ended up playing well enough and kind of just out-talenting the Devils, which was what they needed to do in that environment. And I thought there's a couple guys that stood out in that game, Barzal and Bailey, especially. And I thought Andy Green was really good. Andy Green made a play at the end. It was a little scary when it was Char and Green to close out the game. And there was just a puck in the corner where with maybe 2 minutes left, a minute and a half left, and Green was the first one to it, but he had the near side wall that he was facing was cut off by a couple Devils. The middle of the ice was too dangerous in that situation, so what did he do? He just quickly reversed the puck all the way along the boards out to the other point and cleared it perfectly and got the Islanders out of trouble, which is what he does. And I think he's actually been really good, and I'll say it again, for this, basically the entire season after the first week or so. And but there was a lot more standouts in that game. And then so you expected that Washington game for these players to kind of continue it. But everyone, there were just so many missed easy passes, and just the lack of execution was just so frustrating, because I thought that game was definitely there to be taken. I think if you put the shoe on the other foot, and we were Capitals fans after that second period thinking we should be up 3-0 right now. We kept the Islanders hanging around. They're probably going to nick one. And they didn't, which was really frustrating. I thought like their decisions, I thought Oliver Wahlstrom was a little, it was out to lunch, I guess, a little bit. His decision-making, I think, when to shoot and when to give up his shot was pretty poor.
Yeah, he tried to like muscle through three guys a couple of times, you know, to come through the slot. And it's like, dude, just dump it in. It's fine.
Yeah, it's like you're not only for, because it's probably the right decision, but also because, you know, we you're going to be sitting soon if you keep doing that, because it's just how this team works. And I know a lot of people were frustrated that I thought Matt, the fourth line was pretty bad. And I think a lot of that was because Matt Martin is just like a step behind everybody. That's not good, but I know a lot of people probably like, well, why don't they play Palmieri in that role instead of Martin? It's just not who this team is. You're never going to get that. You're never, ever going to get that, I don't think. But it was like just on from top to bottom, like it was pretty tough. That first line didn't seem to have anything going after a good good game against the Devils. I think you can make an argument that the new killer bees, Brock, Bellows, and Beauvillier were all right. But everyone else, it just wasn't there. And it only will become, oh, it's just one of those games if they win the next three, or, you know, take 5 out of 6 points, however you want to shake it. And that's what's frustrating, because if they did get a couple points out of a game that they didn't deserve them, and I think you could say that this season, the Islanders, maybe they did in the road trip, I can't even remember it anymore, but they haven't really stolen any games. They haven't won any games or gotten any points in games where they didn't deserve it yet, I don't think, which is not a good recipe for success in the NHL when, like you were saying, the Rangers could show up, be down 3-0 in the third period, get outplayed by whoever, and the next thing you know, they've won the game in the shootout. So they got to rectify that.
There's been no luck, really. I mean, we talked at length probably in the first – it feels weird to say the first half of the season, because the Islanders have only played – believe it or not, that was only their 30th game of the season. There's still 52 games left this year. Some of them haven't even been scheduled yet, so I don't even know how that's going to happen. But, there's been no luck. You know, we talked about shooting percentages earlier in the year, and they were down in the dumps. I mean, Kyle Palmieri's individual shooting percentage is like – they haven't invented numbers that low yet. I mean, it's just crazy. And then you talk about, stealing games. I don't feel like any of the goalies have really stepped up. Maybe there was a game where Varlamov really stepped up and stole it, basically. But they've been few and far between. And the fact that we're kind of racking our brains trying to think of one is just evidence that, you know, we didn't remember them. Although, in fairness, it was probably a before or after a 2-week gap in which we forgot every game that they had played. So it's just been a weird, weird, weird season. And again, you know, it's just even the game against the Devils that they won, they didn't play Islanders hockey. Now, it's probably a bad example, and I probably shouldn't even look at it that way, because again, they had been off for 11 days. The Devils didn't play a particularly, you know, disciplined game either. But again, it was kind of just wild back and forth. It was almost like a preseason game with just names that you had heard of before, you know, except in goal, I guess, for the Devils. But we're still waiting on those games where the Islanders look like the Islanders. And I mean, to my count, we've only had like 3 or 4 of them all season. And, you know, that's where if you want to get sort of, pessimistic about their chances of turning it around and getting into the playoffs, that's where I kind of agree with you. Like, I don't see, you know, I could see them putting wins together as they have recently, but they haven't played like themselves. And I think a lot of it has to do with injuries that have hurt, you know, Pulick is out of the lineup and has been for a while, but even still, like they never really replaced Nick Leddy. So that kind of empty spot there, assuming Pulick comes back, let's say soon, he's going to be paired up with Adam Pellick. Now, Chara and Dobson have played well together, finally turning that around, finally getting to, I think, where the team wanted them to be. But then that kind of leaves Scott Mayfield as the third, you know, that third guy. And who's he going to get paired with? Well, I guess Robin Salo. I don't know if they played together this year. Andy Green, maybe. But like Green and Mayfield on the same pair. I feel like they've done that, and it was a terrible combination. So, you know, they haven't played their game for the better part of this season. And that's where I get kind of nervous. And it just, you know, yes, you know, there are things to look at. You can look at, you know, the progression of Dobson and guys like that. And, you know, there are some guys, you know, Barzell has looked, and for the most part, like himself, although, again, shooting percentage isn't there. Pucks aren't quite falling for him the same way. Lee has looked more or less like himself, but, you know, I just want to see that team again. That's the thing. I just want to see that Islanders team that we've seen the last couple of years back together. And if they, you know, if they don't make the playoffs, hey, you know what? A lot happened, and you know, you kind of chalk it up maybe to that. But I just want to see that team again. You know, the one that everybody complained about, the team that won every, you know, two every game 2-1, and you know, they had gave up a ton of shots, but somehow managed to out, you know, get all the high danger chances in the one game, and then nobody was like, oh, these guys winning games. I want to see that team again. Like, I miss that team. You know, winning games is fine, but like, I loved having that structure. I liked having that team win games, and now they just haven't been that team.
Yeah, I definitely miss that team a lot. Yeah, it's. I think it's pretty obvious that this roster construction, not that it's impossible for it to work, but it's just for, like you said, for them to be as consistent as they need to be the 18 wheeler that Barry Trotz likes to cite. Like, it's probably, it needs an injection, right? Like, they need something to change, and there have been some positive developments along the way. I think Dobson is truly, truly on the ascendancy to something really special. Like, he looks like he's, I think at the end of last season, if you asked me where his like ceiling was, I probably would have said, you know, good second pairing defenseman who has his moments, both good and bad. And I think now I'm way, 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 way above that, way above it. Like, first pairing, I really do think this guy, he can run a power play. His shot looks much better. His decision making's been much better, and his skating, everything. He's just like, the way he's reading the game. I think pairing him with Char is going to actually pay off down the road, because you're playing with someone who's so unique, and his skill set has been diminished. So he's like, Dobson's needs to basically compute that into every decision he makes. It's like, okay, like, should I go after this puck? Because I know that even though Char has got the better angle, like, he probably won't get there because of his he can't pivot. Or the other way, like, you know, I know that Char's stick, he's got the reach to probably break this pass up better than I, even though I'm in the spot. So, like, I do think down the road, you know, just his ability to kind of make these decisions in a split second, what you need to do in the game, will even get better. And so you look at that, and the most stunning development maybe is that Kiefer Bellows looking like a good player. And so, like, there's these like blips of you know, long-term optimism and stuff that have arrived in this in this roster construction, which are good. But the you know, the season wide look is that the team does have too many flaws to be the consistent Islanders that we've seen over the past three seasons. So that's where the whole talk of, you know, how long is this, how wide open is this team's window? And I think when if you consider the core, there's many more reasons to be positive than negative. But unless they do fix a couple of holes that aren't going to be particularly easy to fix, but are fixable, you can kind of give credence to people who do doubt that this team, which is, you know, aging obviously, and is already old and doesn't have you know, young top level prospects to kind of just fill in every position. That you can be like, you know, I get why people maybe are down a little bit, thinking that, you know, this was their best shot, and maybe it was, but I think the development of a few players entering their prime and does give you more pause for to be positive than negative right now.
Yeah, well, that's a good segue to what our second half will talk about, some possible changes there. But yeah, it's you know, it's that Caps game. I mean, when Kiefer Bellows is one of the guys who stands out most in a game, it's probably not a good sign. But that being said, with all due respect to Kiefer, he's looked pretty good over the course of the majority of the season. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not worried too much about the long term stuff. But again, this season is just so up for grabs. It's kind of hard to get a handle on how to feel. But we're going to take a break and we're going to come back and talk about some pieces that might make sense for the Islanders at some point. This is going to cost you. So be prepared to put some pieces on the table to get pieces back. But we'll see who makes sense and who we can see coming to the island and who they're probably not going to get. All right. Give us a minute and then come back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And now a word from our sponsors. First always is VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, and mugs featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. Vintage Ice Hockey also carries our Al Arbor t-shirt, and our portion of the sales go directly to the Center for Dementia Research. You can use the code LIGHTHOUSE15 to save yourself 15%. That is VintageIceHockey.com. Betway is the official betting partner of the NHL. Play Big Pick for free or play for real. Residents in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Colorado, Idaho, and Iowa only. I guess New York is probably not too far off, but I'll wait till I see that someplace in writing. Click the link in the podcast description for this if you want to join. Must be 21 or over. Terms and conditions apply. Try wines from the Pinot Project. Delicious Pinot Noir, Pinot Grigio, and Rosé, all under $15 a bottle. Available at your local wine shops and at UBS Arena. Please play and drink responsibly. Okay, so there have been some names in the rumor mill lately, and I want to say right up front that none of these guys have been connected to the Islanders in any way, shape, or form, as most guys in rumor mills aren't, because if they did, Lou Lamoriello would probably cut somebody's fingers off, because that's the way he rolls. However, one of them will be in town this Friday, and his name is Jacob Trickerin, and he's the only member of the Arizona Coyotes that anybody really pays any attention to. He's a guy who there's really no reason for the Coyotes to want to trade Jacob Chychrun other than the fact that they stink and maybe they can get some pieces for him and fill things out. They already have a million draft picks. I don't know. It's not about that. Maybe it's getting about pieces back. But I think it's more about people, i.e. Canadian media members, that see a hole in a lineup of, say, the Oilers or the Carolina Hurricanes, who is Canada's second favorite team all of a sudden, or maybe the Canucks. And they're like, wait a minute, this guy's pretty good. He plays for a crappy team. Maybe they can get him. I haven't watched Chychrun enough to know how good he is. I keep hearing about how great he is. If the Coyotes do give him up, it's not going to be cheap. I don't know if the Islanders have the pieces to get this guy. He is signed. He's 24. He's signed, I think, for the next 4 or 5 years. So, you know, it's not like they'd be giving up a lot for rental, but I don't know. I mean, he's the hot name out there and everybody kind of wants to be involved. And I don't see the Islanders getting him, but I know you're a huge fan. And you keep mentioning to anybody who will listen that when he gets to the Islanders, it'll be a wholly different ball, totally different ball game. So, yeah, I don't know. What is it about Chychrun that makes you think that he's going to be the perfect fit for the Islanders?
Well, there's like a couple of things right off the top that you need to mention. There's that, as it's the hockey media, hockey fans, everyone looks at trades in the same like prism when it's you can't, right? We saw it. I think one of the best examples ever was the Andy Green trade when the Islanders gave up a second round pick and everyone freaked out and made fun of the Islanders for doing that. But then if you look at it from purely the Islanders in a vacuum, that Andy Green made so much sense for them at the time with Adam Pellick out. That's exactly the type of player they needed. And I mean, you could see, I think now you look back at that trade and say, yeah, the Islanders won it in a trade that everyone made fun of. So you need to look at trades from different perspectives, like even the Taylor Hall trade for the Sabres last year. Taylor Hall was going to be traded. Everybody knew he was going to be traded, and he only wanted to go to a couple specific spots. So like, it's not like the Sabres could get the maximum amount of value because they didn't have the full bidding war to play against. So mm-hmm. when that trade got made fun of on the Sabres perspective, you need to then look at it from the Buffalo standpoint, which is they probably got the best offer. It's not like they turned down a better offer because, you know, they're like, well, we're, you know, we just want to, like, it's, this is how it works. So no matter what happens, this trade, if whoever gets Chychrun, will be looked at, lampooned from 100 different directions that aren't from the team that is actually affecting. And I think that for the Islanders, it does make so much sense that if it is a big package, you need to view it as, yeah, they gave up a lot, but what they did was they now have a cost-controlled defenseman in the right spot, and you're now looking for the next, you know, 5 years of Adam Pellick, Ryan Pulock, Jacob Chychrun, and Noah Dobson in their primes, which gives you the best top four in the league probably next season, you know, as long as things stay on script with health and development, et cetera. So you look at it from that point, it makes a total amount of sense. And then, like, the other thing is that people always seem to overestimate what the return is for going to be for a player. So if you listen to 32 Thoughts, you listen to the Jeff Marek show, which are the two kind of daily news outlets, I guess, for NHL fans, especially on the side of the Canadian border to listen to, you're hearing that they want, you know, first round pick, a young player who's already on a roster, a prospect, and then probably like a B-level prospect or whatever. Yes, of course that's what they want. Like, and that's what they're not going to say, oh, what do you want? Like, oh, we want, you know, first round pick, and if we get more, that's great. Like, that's not what they're going to say. Like, the Coyotes are going to PR their way to the best deal that they can get, so they're going to put that out there. So people are like, well, it's going to take Aitu, Ratu, Beauvillier, Bellows, plus a first for the Islanders to get him. Yeah, I'd be shocked if that's what they end up paying. At that point, then you could really start to think about the return. But the point is that it's likely going to be underwhelming, because when has there been a trade that's made where everyone's like, wow, what a haul for this team to get for Jacob Chychrun, who they know is going to be traded. So the leverages are pretty much gone already. Like, it's the Coyotes are going to trade this guy. So teams know that, and they're not going to, they're bidding against one another rather than just trying to pry a player away from the Coyotes. Like, this, the prying part doesn't need to be done. So you don't need to sweeten the pot that way. So I actually think, like, and I do, you know, not to go all insider, but like, I do have somebody who I was talking to that said the Islanders are definitely in it. And I think what that tells you is that whereas a lot of people will say the Islanders don't have like the farm system needed to pull off a deal of this magnitude, they still have enough young high end players. I mean, it'll deplete it further, which if doesn't really matter to this team right at this second. But I do think like they can probably get away with a trade that will end up with people saying, "Oh, that's all the Coyotes got for Chychrun." Like, that's crazy. But it more likely than not will require somebody who, you know, we all like or love or whatever, being removed from the roster or the organization, whether it's a prospect or whatever. But I do think that those are the two things to always keep in mind when the island, like when any team and your team's involved in a trade rumor, is that your team is different from the other 31 teams. So you got to remember that when people from Toronto are parachuting in to weigh in on the trade. And then two, that the rumored returns are always so much drastically higher than what they are. I mean, even think about the Jack Eichel trade, which I thought the Sabres did pretty well to get guys like Peyton Krebs and Alex Tuch, first of all. Like, he's makes a ton of sense for them because he's from the area.
I was going to say he wanted to go to Buffalo. Right.
Like, so like, you, like there are so many kind of like those kind of in the weeds things that people are going to gloss over. And I don't think anyone was like, wow, that what a haul for Buffalo. Like they just gave up one of the best players in the league and that's what they got back. Jacob Chychrun, even with Eichel being hurt and coming off that surgery, is nowhere near the value of Jack Eichel, right? So you're already looking at if they gave up a young roster player, a good prospect, and what, a first and a second for Eichel? I can't remember the exact package. Where does Chychrun, who you know, fit next to Jack Eichel? And I think you'd say like what, 60% of maybe that package. So that's the things to keep in mind, because it's just going to be when this does, these sweepstakes do really hit a crescendo with when Chychrun gets healthy, because he's been on IR for a bit. Just don't get sucked into the it's going to take this and this. Like
that's what happens to me, and that Eichel thing, I hadn't even thought about it, but you're right. And actually, now that I think about it, the previous Coyotes standout defenseman that got traded that we kept hearing about, people they were going to want a King's ransom for, was Oliver Ekman-Larsson, that got dumped off to the Canucks with a bunch of other busted parts. Well, he got traded essentially for a bunch of busted parts because the Coyotes were ready to tank. And so nobody would have ever in the previous, whatever, 5 years of OEL trade rumors, nobody ever thought that it was going to take Jay Beagle, Louis Erickson, and I think, a couple of picks or whatever for not only OEL, but who was the other guy that went to Vancouver?
Connor Garland. Yeah.
And like Connor Garland. Yeah. Like, so, and at first it was like, oh my God, the Canucks really, made out on that deal, but OEL's been pretty lousy. Garland, I guess, is sort of okay. But the team itself is really, outside of that hot streak with Bruce Boudreau, it's not been going all that well in Vancouver this year. So, yeah, I guess that's true. You never really do know. And who knows what's going around in the mind of Coyotes GM Bill Armstrong. Who says that the picks have to be this year, too? Maybe he'd prefer picks for next year's draft, too, which the Islanders have their full complement of. His is the big name out there. I think, there's some sense to be made for the Islanders. And, top four of Pelech, Pulick, Chychrun, Dobson, and then, Mayfield as the fifth guy. And that's pretty darn good. And then you could slot a Salo or, I don't know if Green would come back. Char is definitely not coming back, but they find somebody else. There's also Samuel Bulldog in the AHL, but maybe Bulldog, maybe he goes over to Arizona. You never know. But, it is hard to part with guys that you like. And sadly for Anthony Beauvillier, Arthur Staple was joking, I think, recently that, he keeps bringing up Beauvillier in these trade rumors. And it's like, he's not trying to get rid of this guy. And obviously he doesn't have the power to, even if he wanted to. And it's not like the Islanders are trying to get rid of this guy either, but he's a kind of movable part. Like, he's a guy who you can see being good enough to throw into a trade, but at the same time being kind of replaceable if you can find another scoring winger somewhere in free agency or maybe even the draft. But there's another defenseman who is available apparently right now, which is a completely different set of circumstances, and that is John Klingberg of the Stars. The Stars, we'll talk about Dallas in a second because they're kind of a fascinating team right now, but he is a UFA at the end of the year. He is 30 years old, and he's been around for quite a long time. He's 29. He'll be 30 at some point this year, and he wants a big salary cap. He wants a big new contract, and the Stars have given out a lot of big contracts, and Klingberg, unfortunately, was the last guy in line and didn't get one. So now he wants to move on to something else. To me, of all the people he and Chychrun, to me, I think Klingberg makes the most sense for the Islanders. He plays a more kind of Nick Leddy-ish game, a little bit more offensively minded than Chychrun does. He's got a higher, he's kind of better underlying stats over the last couple of years. He is older. He's about a good 5 years, 4.5 years older than Chychrun. So, there's that to consider. And he's going to want a big ticket. Like, that's the thing, too. I do think the Islanders have the cap room to give it to him. If you look at cap friendly, I think they might be able to make it work. Again, assuming that somebody goes the other way. Am I crazy to think that, like, a Beauvillier for Klingberg trade might kind of benefit both teams? Bo, I think, has 2 years left on his deal, right? And then he's a UFA himself. And then Klingberg, you'd obviously have to – I wouldn't do it without knowing I'm going to sign Klingberg. I don't know. To me, that seems to – would kind of benefit maybe both teams. They could get some little scoring. I don't know what the Stars are looking for. I think they might be just looking for anything in a Klingberg trade, and I don't know if they want, like, picks or anything, because they're – like the Islanders, they're an older team. who knows what the future holds for them. They've got a lot of moving parts. They're not terrible, but they certainly aren't going too many places this year. And to me, Klingberg is the one that fits best because he can give the Islanders what they're missing from not having Letty and obviously Devon Taves. We don't get into that. We don't need to get into that. But when I think of the Chychrun stuff, I'm like, yeah, I guess that'd be pretty cool, but it'd cost a lot. And I hear Klingberg and I'm like, now that's a guy I think they can get a lot cheaper and would fill their needs better, going forward for the, foreseeable future.
I guess it depends on the number that he would need to extend at. Because if he wants this crazy deal from Dallas or max deal.
Oh, yeah. If he wants like $8 million or something.
Yeah. Then you're like, it just really, but like Lou has been so good at getting guys to not do that. So like if he came in at like a number, closer to the Pelech and Pollock or a little less than what they've been doing, like it makes a lot of sense to get him. So like the variables with him are just like a lot, like with Chychrun, like this guy's coming in, he's coming in at this number for the next 3 years or so. With Klingberg, you're like, okay, he's probably the ceiling's higher. He's a really, talented kind of in his own way player. He's really good at keeping plays alive, at opening space on the blue line by just moving the puck himself, by skating or passing. And he fits in with the Islanders well. And it's been far too long since the Islanders have had a solid Swedish defenseman too. We might get there with
Salo.
I think Salo is Finnish, and then Sebastian Aho somehow is Swedish, which is so funny because it should be the other way around. And with Aho or whatever. But like I was saying earlier, it just depends on what would have to be taken from off the Islanders lineup to get either player. I think is, and that's obvious to say, but because I think a Klingberg move is riskier than a Chychrun move, even though it would probably cost more to get Chychrun than it would cost to get Klingberg. I think the fact once again, and this is going back to when the Islanders were talked about when they traded for Pageau and then were all day long, trying to figure out how to make the logistics and accounting work for Parisi for Ladd deal. That trade deadline, it's just fun to know that they're being talked about to be in the mix. Who knows if they actually are, like with Lou, but the Chychrun, it does seem like they definitely are on Chychrun and have like they are a sensible landing space, which probably means that they're likely thinking about Klingberg, what it would take to. But that's like exciting, and it does show you that this team is not only has an eye on this year, which is slipping away, but the season next season too, where either one of those guys on the blue line changes the outlook of this team completely. And as we were alluding to earlier in the episode, that's what they need. And there's as long as things just don't go completely off the rails with the players in their core, pretty safe bet to say that Barzal and Wahlstrom, Beauvillier, Andersley, even like Brock Nelson, these guys, Pageau, will be Cizikas too. Like they'll be at or above the level that they could keep progressing or be close enough to the level they're at now next season. And then you throw in a guy like one of those two players, and it really does give the team a ton of hope, especially with the goaltending that they have. Like you said earlier with Varlamov, like seeing Semyon Varlamov turn the corner and get back into form is great. Not just because his stock rising is a good thing on every level, because you need your goalie to be good. The team relies on his goaltending. And, but also if the Islanders are truly out of it, at the deadline, you want to talk about holding a king's ransom, like Semyon Varlamov could win a team a cup. So like, it's serious. Like you trade that guy to Washington, to Pittsburgh, to Edmonton, teams that probably need just a little bit more stability and goal. Teams like Florida, with Spencer Knight kind of struggling there. And I know that the number would probably be too big with him and Bobrovsky, but, the Islanders are going to be involved in a lot of these things in a lot of different ways but they're going to be such a peculiar team because, they know that next season, no matter how, if they lose every other game this year, like next season, they're going to be expected to contend and need to contend again. Like, so their trade deadline is going to be fascinating from that standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I don't know what their appetite is for trading Varlamov, but you're right. Like they could, they could, and they could probably get a lot for him. And, if you have been watching from afar, the meltdown of the Edmonton Oilers has been hugely entertaining. In fact, they lost last night. They had a 3-1 lead on the Ottawa Senators and ended up losing 6-4. And if you haven't watched the video of that, I highly recommend it because it is hilarious.
Like how Ken Holland isn't calling
you
every day to say like what was, but they're funny that they don't, they're kind of like the Islanders where I don't really think their prospect pool is thought of as much like that highly. So like I in my head, I'm like, you might, if like hypothetically and if it was like a Varlamov to Edmonton deal, like that's been thrown, it's been thrown around and his name has been mentioned in as like a sensible move.
For sure.
On NHL radio, they always talk about him whenever they talk about, they need to get a goalie. Like Varlamov makes sense. I'm like what the hell would the Oilers have that would be worth giving Semyon Varlamov up? Because like, once again, you have to look at it, the deal from the context of the Islanders. First of all, good goalie, really good goalie, still at an age where it's appropriate to think he's going to be good again next year.
Sure.
And
huge part of the locker room. They love him.
And the guy he's playing with him is his, they seem to be great together. Yeah. Like they like each other a lot. They're both Russian. The Sorokin seems to be a guy who leans on Varlamov a lot in terms of just like navigating a new, completely new culture. So like to delete that, all of that from the roster to maybe, you know, unsettle your goalie of the future a little bit. Like what does that cost the Islanders? You know, what would that be? So that's why you always need to look at it, these trades from the low, like go a few layers than just Pierre LeBrun saying, I like this return.
Yeah.
And I would think Jeff Marek saying, you know, rattling off whoever, wherever the prospect they get plays junior hockey and what his coaches say about him.
Dude, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. And I wasn't joking before when I said that I watched the video of the Senators beating the Oilers before, but I don't know who was calling the game, but like it was, you know, they take clips from the game itself and it's the third period. The Senators are, you know, go up a goal or whatever. And again, whoever is doing the game is talking about the guys' junior teams. Who cares? We got past this when we got rid of Pierre Maguire on NBCSN. And now he's, I assume, walking around the Senators' offices telling people where everybody played their junior leagues. But like, dude, who cares? Like when you watch, you're going to watch football games this weekend that are playoff games. Nobody's going to bring up what they did in college. If anything, they are, it'll be like in passing. I was watching the Bengals game and they mentioned that Joe Burrow and I guess Jamar Chase were both from LSU, and that's fine, but it's like, it's done. It's over with. They don't make it sound like that's what this guy was when he was a 16-year-old playing for St. Mike's. Like who cares? Just get on with it. Life goes on. Things go on. Let the guy be what he's going to be now. Why do we keep talking about what this guy did when he was 16? Who the hell cares? Everybody's a super goal scorer in junior. That's how they get drafted. Then they come to the NHL and they turn into something else. It drives me bananas. God.
And then they try to like one up each other too.
I guess
it's the best. It's like,
shouting out these tiny little Canadian cities, I guess. I don't know. It's just,
yeah. And I get like, you know, like a lot of these cities in Canada are like in like remote cold places and they have like small populations. So it is nice when, you know, players like Dylan Cousins or something makes it to the NHL and that's great. Like, but Dylan Cousins, there's not, if you do it for everybody, it waters down what Dylan Cousins accomplished a lot.
And don't do it to the detriment of the broadcast that's happening right now. Like what, again, I've said this before, once the third period starts, enough with the junior stuff. Like we're talking about now, like that's it.
And you also have people who like on ESPN Plus who are tuning in and being like, oh yeah, like I would think I might be getting into hockey. Oh, McDavid's playing. This is great. Yeah. Oh, it's a fun game between the Oilers and Senators. And then you hear the guy talking about, how his coach in junior said like he was, you know, in when he played for Kelowna, he was in the locker room at first, last to leave, that kind of guy. And the person watching in, you know, Kansas City is like, what? Wow, this is, I need to figure out where these places are. That seems like it's way too much work.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if you were watching it on ESPN, the only commentary you'd be hearing would be John Buttigieg talking about biscuits and sauce and flow and lettuce.
It's terrible.
And then you just turn it off. I have no idea what the hell this guy's talking about.
You brought up a point last year with like, John Forslund and his catchphrases and stuff. And since you brought that up, I always like listened for him. And the funny thing, like the thing with Forslund, at least he's like a professional at like weaving them in and out. And they get annoying because, you know, they're canned. But with Buchagrass, it's like he's calling the game for as if like he's got like 12 friends who like he wants to prove that he's like a cool hockey guy too. He's like, did you hear me say that Miro Heiskanen did a spinorama and then backhand sauce and then the celly was sick? Like, yeah, John, we all heard it. It was very embarrassing.
Yo, you guys hear me talk about Jack Hughes's lettuce? That was man, it's awesome. Yeah. Anyway, that was a Dom thing. I hadn't even thought about Forslund's catchphrases until I saw Dom mention it in a recap, and I was like, he does a lot of and then I watch it. Now all I hear when I hear John Forslund is catchphrases, and it's like, yeah. So, but one other guy, real quick before we move on, that's another defenseman that might be available. Hampus Lindholm of the Ducks. He was an early target. Art Staple brought him up a bunch of times in some early articles. But then the Ducks got off to this crazy hot start, and all of a sudden it looked like, oh wow, they're going to be really good this year. Well, now all of a sudden they stink again. So maybe Lindholm, he's another UFA, becomes available. Kind of in between Klingberg, probably not as good as Klingberg, maybe a little bit more sort of on the offensive end as Chychrun, a little older than Chychrun too. He's another guy who I think the Islanders might be able to get. The Ducks seem like they were playing with some foul money this year, but have all of a sudden come crashing down hard to earth. So I don't know, but you know, I could still kind of see that maybe happening. But
he'd be interesting because he would be, I think, in terms of his next contract, would be a little cheaper than the other one than Klingberg. So it's like. Yeah, an interesting option there. And someone who I've always wanted. I think the Islanders had a shot to draft him. I can't remember when it was, when he was drafted, but he was there. And I think they might have went, that might have been the Griffin Reinhardt thing.
That was 2012. Yeah, they took Reinhardt and then Lindholm went two guys afterwards.
Which they traded, you know, Reinhardt for Barzal. So
yeah, Jesus, that worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it right now. It was Reinhardt. That draft was, so Ryan Murray, second overall. Galchenyuk third, and then Reinhardt, Morgan Riley, Hampus Lindholm, Matt Dumba. And of those five guys, the last two, well, Morgan Riley's pretty good. Dumba's obviously pretty good. Lindholm's fine. You know, he's not a bad player. He's totally fine. But the first two guys, by far the worst of them. Yeah, you know, Ryan Murray and Reinhardt.
And that's, so. I think that's the infamous draft where they tried to trade everybody for Ryan Murray for the right to take him. And also, that's also the day that they traded for Lubo Visnovsky.
Right.
And then a couple weeks later, he was in, or months later, he was in Slovakia on his team's bus. And someone posted a picture. And we're like, hey, that guy's an Islander. We got to get, he's not supposed to be playing for them.
Just Jacob Trouba, Slater Cuckoo. I remember him, people talking about him like he was going to be great. Didn't work out that way. Olli Maatta, too.
Was that the seven defenseman draft, too?
Yes.
For us?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that draft, and just in, you want to, Islanders 30 for 30s, like that draft is from the Lubo to the trying to trade everyone for Murray, Griffin for Barzal, and then the fact that they took all seven defensemen and Pelech was the one who ended up probably being one of the best in the entire draft, maybe the best in the third round, right?
Well, all right, here's your Geico trivia question of the day. Okay, so they drafted the Islanders drafted Reinhardt in the first, so they were all defensemen in that draft.
Yeah.
So they drafted Reinhardt in the first round. They drafted Pelech in the third round. Who did they draft in the second round?
I was going to answer this question before you even finish the question.
Yeah.
Billy Poka.
Billy Poka.
Who I thought was going to be awesome. I remember, like, he was, and then when they traded him for Letty, I was like, you know, the Blackhawks, like, they're going to love, you guys are going to love Billy Poka. And TJ Brennan, right? TJ Brennan was the other guy in that trade.
Yeah. So. This whole draft is packed to the gills with weird defenders. Shane Gostisbehere is also on it. Colton Parayko, third round also. Matt Grizzlick. Wow. This is a crazy. They should do a 30 for 30 on this draft. Loic Leduc, also another Islanders pick there. And so a lot of fun. Anyway. Oh, Connor Hellebuck. He's not a defenseman. What are you doing? What's he doing in here? So there you go. So some options there, I think, you know, for the Islanders going forward. But again, it's going to depend on what teams want and where the Islanders are headed. Like, we have absolutely no idea. And, you know, real quick on these three games coming up. So they got a back-to-back against Philly Monday, Tuesday. I believe the Tuesday game is in Philly. Then they got Friday night against the Coyotes. They have two back-to-back games this week, Friday night against the Coyotes and then Saturday against the Leafs. So it's a weird schedule. Three games that, quite frankly, the Islanders need to have. Like, if you don't come away with 6 points from these first three games, man, I don't know what to tell you. Like, maybe win one in overtime or shootout or something like that. But, like, come on. The Leafs are going to be hard to come by. We've already seen them. Now, when the Islanders did play the Leafs last time, very famously, their lineup was half dudes from Bridgeport. So I'm hoping for a better result this time. And, you know, I don't think the Leafs are an unbeatable team. They certainly can win. They lost to the Coyotes the other day, thanks to a very strong Colton performance. So the Islanders are going to need that. But, I mean, these first three games, man, you got to beat these. I mean, the Flyers at this point are like, that's a dead team walking. Like, they're poor guy. I feel bad for them. They just have no idea what's coming up. And then the Coyotes, I feel even worse for. Their season never really got started. So get 6 points out of these games. That's all I can tell you. And then we'll worry about the rest of the season after that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right. You get six points. And then we're doing the Godfather meme all over again. You know, it's just, that's how it's going to be this season. And
yeah,
there's just so many layers you can look at it. You can look at it from the every game standpoint, like I was saying before. You can look at it from the 3-4, or you know, Maddie the Usher who listens is like, you know, if they go 19-10-2 over the next 31, like, that's not a crazy pace, and that should get them to a point where they're close enough to be quote unquote in the race around the deadline or whatever. And so, like, you can look at it from, you can do as much mental gymnastics as you want to justify staying invested in the season, or you can just write it off if you want to. Like, you can really go a million different directions with it, how to approach this right now as a fan. And like you said, it's the most unfortunate part about this whole thing is that they played 30 games. There's still 52 left, and we're in January. Like,
I woke up thinking that, oh my God, there's 52 games left.
Yeah.
How is that even possible? I feel like they played 52 already. I'm exhausted. And they barely, I mean, they've gone weeks without playing. It's crazy. But it's just how it is this season. It's insane. But let's get these points. I mean, especially, you know, if they could bury Philly, I mean, that would probably effectively end their season, which would be fun. And then the Coyotes, I don't know where they're, I mean, I'm assuming the Coyotes probably are playing in the Garden or Jersey or whatever, or maybe even Philly, you know, a night before, which is probably why the Islanders are playing on Friday night. But they need to get this. And then, you know, obviously we all want them to beat the Leafs, but we just got to hope for the best there. I'm tired of talking about the Leafs. Okay, real quick before we sign off, if you're subscribed to the Lighthouse Hockey podcast feed, you may have seen, or hopefully you've already listened to, Mike and I debuted a new podcast last week called Weird Islanders. We had our friend Carrie Haber on, and the first subject of the first episode of Weird Islanders was one of the weirdest Islanders of all, Brian Rolston. It was a fun conversation, and it's a lot different from this show. We just kind of start talking about one player, and then we end up down 100 different rabbit holes of other players. We're going to do it again, hopefully real soon. We're going to get another guest on. The criteria, in case you haven't listened and you want to know what a weird Islander means, criteria is a couple of different things. First of all, the guy has to have played either one season or less for the Islanders, or he has to have played multiple small parts over the course of multiple seasons. So, for example, a guy who played one season for the Islanders that we might discuss would be, say, Zdeněk Konopka. But a guy who played multiple seasons with the Islanders, but really only short cups of coffee, would be like a Jeremy Colliton, somebody like that. The other criteria is they have to be a veteran a player who nobody really associates with the Islanders. And of course, the classic example of that with somebody like Cliff Ronning. Nobody remembers Cliff Ronning as an Islander except us, basically. They might remember him, probably remember him as a Vancouver Canuck, maybe remember him as a Phoenix Coyote or a Nashville Predator. But he did, in fact, play for the Islanders for one season. So, you know, it's kind of a loose criteria, but we got to have rules. So, you know, it's a fun time. We're trying to do things different. The response has been great. We've already heard a lot of other suggestions. You know who I left off the list? And you're going to be mad at me for leaving this guy off the list. I can't believe I forgot this guy, Val Filppula. We're definitely going to have an episode on Val Filppula.
Oh, right? Man.
I mean, that has to happen.
Yeah. You know, it's just a recency bias thing. Because when you think right. Weird Islander, you're putting on a navy blue, you know, 2000s era jersey.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Most in your head. And, man, yeah, Val Filppula.
Yeah,
I guess, you know, I'll save it for the Weird Islanders on Val Filppula, but
that was like a really like head slappingly, come on. Yeah. But yeah, like my brain immediately goes to like Milbury era Islanders or even the early Snow era, you know, where they had a million guys rotating.
Val Filppula. I just need to say one thing. A lot of times when I'm watching highlights from that season, he ends up scoring huge goals, like, in every one. I'm like, oh, shit. Like, Val Filippula scored that goal against the Leafs in their first game against them when they were in Toronto. And it just, yeah, Val Filippula, man.
Yeah. I mean, he's literally the guy we called Weird Franz.
Yeah. Because
he was, like, 51 after Franz Nielsen. And so I just, like, I always tell my wife, I'm like, we call this guy Weird. Literally, we named him Weird Franz, and I completely left him off the Weird Island.
And him and Leo, like,
yeah.
I think because when Lou came in and he signed Leo and extended Hickey and extended Ross Johnston and kind of and then like the Leonard trade was, I mean, the Leonard signing was like a polarizing one at the time too, because he was coming off some down years, and Phil Pullard kind of just like ended up on the team somehow. I don't I can tell you exactly where I was when they signed Leo. I can tell you where I was when they extended Hickey and Johnston on that day. And I know exactly where I was for like most of these guys. And I think Val just like showed up at training camp one day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think he was with Philly at the time and he was a UFA and he just showed up. So, but I just, you know, I got this huge list of guys. And again, thanks to everybody who made some more suggestions, but he was the one that I was like, man, I should have seen that one coming. But anyway, but yeah, we'll get to him eventually. You know, hopefully, like I said, I'm hoping to line up another guest for this week and well, fun times. If you haven't checked out Weird Islanders, definitely do that. So I guess that's about it. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. Check out VintageIceHockey.com. Check out Betway. Check out ThePinoProject.com. Where can everybody find you on Twitter?
Excuse me, the Big Lebowski, two E's.
Find Mike at the Big Lebowski. Follow him on Twitter there. Read his work at the Action Network. I'll put a link to that favorites article in there because I read that and it was actually kind of fascinating. And you wouldn't think of it that, you know, you're like, yeah, the favorites always win. But no, these guys this year are really.
Yeah, it's just dominating.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, which is good, which is bad news for every non-favorite out there, which is, yeah. I'm assuming the Islanders probably let the underdog more often than not this year.
Yeah.
Oh, you got to say?
No, I was just laughing.
anyway, that's it. And we'll be back next week after these four whole games. Can you stand it? Can you believe the Islanders are going to play four whole games in 1 week? We'll see how that works out. But as of right now, they are scheduled to play them all. So enjoy the games, and we'll talk to you again next week. All right. Thanks a lot. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.